I'm John from Game Life Balance US, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to this is PopX episode number 32 coming to you right here live on PopX.live. Austin Burke, what's going on in your neck of the woods, dude?
Nothing much, Joe. I'm really excited to be back after last week's episode. Oh, man. Come on. Was that not one of the best we've done so far?
You know what? I remember last week recording that, and I looked down at the clock, and it was like,
It flew by.
It was like 9:55, yeah. And I'm like, what the heck just happened?
Right?
It was absolutely so crazy. But, man, we have got another jam-packed show for you lined up this week, and I'm just really, really happy. Hey, guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We would like to welcome everyone right now joining us on our live streams in the PopX.live and the Geeks.live chat rooms. Come hang out with us and join the conversation live right here at PopXcast.com.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian Geek at Heart. Hey, if you guys missed last week's episode 31, where we reviewed Stranger Things and frankly discussed everything about it, Please check out our official website at PopXcast.com. Be sure also to head over to Google Play and or iTunes, click that subscribe button, catch up with us. And also, while you're there, please leave us a glowing and wonderful 5-star rating and review. We certainly appreciate that. Joseph Burke, how are you today?
As you can tell, I've got a little bit of a nasal thing going.
A sniffle, sir.
Yeah, I've got, as we like to call in Appalachia, garfus. I got a case of the garfus.
That's the worst.
It sucks so bad. Mm-hmm. But so did you have a good week?
I had a great week. Like you, I did find myself getting sick at the end of the week. I actually had some stomach issues and some vomiting problems.
You don't have to go. Yeah.
Listen, I'm just saying, man, it's been a rough last few days, but you know what? I'm motivated. I'm pumped. I'm ready to get this episode going, man.
All right, let's do it. All right, so we're going to roll that beautiful bean footage. This is PopX News right here.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live, right here on PopXcast.com.
All righty, and we have a really cool list for you guys this week. We actually, Lindsay Badger and myself, Lieutenant Badger, sat down and compiled a list of shows that are starting up for the fall season that are comic-related or that we have mentioned on the show previously. And so even though this list is about 13 or 14 long, we're only going to do half of it because we haven't entered October yet. So, you know, I'm just saying. But Fear the Walking Dead has already started. We know that. It's already like 3 in right now. So if you didn't get the memo on that, you're about 3 episodes behind. So you might want to catch up. Also, this is cool. Next week, Gotham. Can you believe it? We're already at season 3 of Gotham.
Holy cow.
September the 19th, 8 o'clock on FX. And also, Lucifer on that Monday. It's right after Gotham at 9 p.m. And that's on Fox. So another great show. Shows back-to-back starting out the new fall lineup. Also, what shows do you have for us?
We also have the brand new season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premiering on September 20th at 10 p.m. on ABC. I believe this year's theme is Ghost Rider, so if you are a fan of that character, you should definitely tune in to this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Next up, we have the return of MacGyver on September 23rd at 8 o'clock on CBS. This is pretty exciting. I've seen the trailers. I can't wait to see what they do with this character.
It's going
to
be fun. I was a fan of the original, so I'm on the fence. I got to see it to believe it.
We have to give it a chance.
I've got
to
see the pilot first. So
the last three episodes. Yeah. We also have The Exorcist premiering on September 23rd on Fox. Ooh. This show looks frightening.
Yes. And so there's definitely a flair of, and I'd forgotten to add on this list, and I'll try to add that. Maybe Lindsay Badger can do a quick Google for us. Is an American Horror Story. I know that season six is supposed to come out here in either next week or the week after. So we'll get Lieutenant Badger on that for us. But I know before we go on to the rest of the news, I'm really excited to be part of Orlando right now. Because we are in the 26th year of Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios. And a lot of this stuff that you see here, like The Exorcist and American Horror Story and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Universal Studios has actually rebuilt these experiences. And you get to walk through them in about a 10-minute walkthrough per house. And wow. So if you can imagine a film production company like Universal Studios and Comcast building something that they own, it's just going to be off the chain.
I bet it's amazing.
Yeah, it's freaking great. So, all right. So, moving on with some news today. Today is September the 11th, 2016. And I can't believe it's been 15 Septembers since the tragic days of 9/11. And, I want to say this right quick. Lindsay Badger, just let me know. The September the 14th for American Horror Story. Thank you so much. But, it's interesting, when I was watching some videos today, like most of us do on September the 11th, we watch it and we remember and we go through the process and the motions. And I know exactly where I was when the Twin Towers fell. And today has been chiseled in American history as we first pause to honor the brave first responders and those who literally gave all during the horrific acts of 9/11. It's been 15 Septembers since that day when the Twin Towers fell. Our nation's security has been breached, and America forever changed. Today, many of us talk about global topics in a post-9/11 manner. And we at PopX are so proud to be in a nation where we can do things like this podcast every week and be who we want to be, not what our government tells us we have to be. So please join us in a moment of silence, as we remember. All right, Mr. Burke.
Let's move on with the news, man. Very well said, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
Very well said. In tech news this week, Sony unveiled the all-new PS4 Pro, which will render gaming, listen to this, in 4K and boosting graphic, RAM, and hard drive capabilities. The new unit comes with a $299 price tag. PS4 Pro will be in stores November 10th. Wow.
Wow, the PlayStation. Now, I actually got a chance to watch, coincidentally enough, September the 7th was the day of the keynotes. Apple had their keynote, and then PlayStation had theirs as well. And I got to watch the tail end of PlayStation, Sony's keynote, about unveiling this. And I don't have a 4K TV yet. So I am like, so I still got a 1080p, but I don't have, but it's really interesting though, because the graphic and the pixels and all that they can do with modern games, it's going to be really crazy because it's almost, you're thinking 4,000 pixels wide, of a ratio. That's pretty crazy to develop a game with that much detail. So yeah, that's pretty crazy.
It's going to be beautiful.
And talking about keynotes, Apple also unveiled the brand new iPhone 7 this past week, and it sent shockwaves throughout the internet that they've removed the headphone jack. Now, the internet took to Apple, making parodies, poking fun, and mocking the tech giant for its less-than-okay updates and mediocre design. The phone hits shelves, though, September the 16th. And so what's your thought on no headphone jack iPhone 7?
You know, at this point, I've heard so many people complaining, it's hard not to have the thought of, why don't they have a headphone jack? But listen to this. Here's what I heard. I don't know for a fact. There will be an adapter, correct,
yes,
that will come with the iPhone that will be able to allow people to use their headphones instead of having to buy the brand new, very expensive headphones that, you know, go with the new iPhone.
You're not forced to buy them. And so, I do want to clear the air, too, here before we move on. I did pre-order the iPhone 7 Plus, 128 gig, and it will be here next week. And so here's what I want to tell you. Something a lot of people don't know is the new headphones that come in the case are lightning connector headphones.
Yeah.
So you're not getting the coaxial headphone jack case. You're actually getting lightning connector, which is kind of cool.
But that's incredible.
So
I did not know you ordered that. That's very exciting, Joe. You'll have to show that off to me next week.
Oh, I'll show it to you next week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, from the Apple keynote this past September 7th, it was revealed that, oh my goodness, this is so exciting. The video game giant Nintendo has struck a deal with Apple to bring Super Mario to the App Store.
Mm.
It is a highly favored move for the struggling video game company, which gained momentum with its Pokemon Go app. What is that? I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of that.
This past September.
Pikachu.
this past summer. Grab those mushrooms and stomp those Goombas. Mario has bit into the Big Apple. This is probably my favorite thing we're talking about this week in the news,
Joe. I'm really excited because this is for the first time you're getting one of the video game company giants on board with one of their licensed products. I know we have Sonic the Hedgehog in the App Store, but he's owned by Sega, and Sega now no longer makes consoles. They only just do software. So for Nintendo to come on board, I think it makes. Imagine playing Super Mario Run on the iPad Pro.
Here's the thing.
If you think about this, this is just such a smart move by Nintendo because the iPad Pro that's out right now is almost triple times more powerful than the Wii U system.
Absolutely.
So they can develop games, Metroid, Zelda. Yes. This is not just limited to Super Mario. This is Nintendo franchise wide. Mm. So think about that. Think of the possibilities that we can have. Think about playing Zelda with your friend online.
Don't do this to me,
John. I'll just drop that right there for you. All right, go ahead. All right, so Kevin Smith. Where are we at here? Oh my gosh, I'm just so frazzled with the news this week. Kevin Smith will be back to direct another episode of The Flash. Smith will be directing episode 7 of season 3, and he said that he has read the script and he loved it. He stated that will be more of an action-y than my last episode. Now, we remember his last episode is when Barry came face to face with the Time Force, and you know, it was a really emotional kind of episode where he was stuck in the Time Force and he was trying to talk about it and he was dealing with all the emotional aspects of trying to get back to his friends and trying to save his mother. Mm-hmm. And it was a really well done episode and I love it. So
it was, and it's exciting to see that he's going from, you know, really more of a think piece episode to an action-y episode. Yeah. And I think Kevin Smith does a great job with that. So that's very exciting. Also in the news this week, DC Comics and Dynamite Entertainment will be joining together for a crossover series, Wonder Woman 77 meets the Bionic Woman. Mm. The two heroes will be hitting the pages together on December 7th. This is pretty exciting. It's different, but it's exciting.
I like seeing the old school Wonder Woman.
Don't you just miss it?
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing.
Wonder
was
Woman! Incredible. Yeah. it was really funny. Last year, when it was the 75th anniversary of Wonder Woman, the Smithsonian unveiled the invisible plane.
Oh my goodness!
It was just literally a podium that says the invisible plane, Wonder Woman. It was so hilarious. Everybody was just like, they're like taking pictures, and I'm like, why are you?
What are you taking pictures of?
It's just I don't know what's
that's
going
great.
On. So on October the 5th, Marvel Comics is releasing Deadpool Back in Black, and it will follow Deadpool after Venom merges with him once Spider-Man kicks it to the curb. So can you imagine the symbiote and the Merc with the mouth uniting for the first time?
Chaos. That is chaos.
So is it like, so we got Carnage, we got Venom, we got Anti-Venom, we got, so what is it going to be with, it's crazy. My mind's blown.
It's going to be the craziest thing you've ever read, Joe. Just picturing that in my head, I can't wait to see what's, oh my goodness. In Stan Lee news, Stan Lee cameos have been confirmed for Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Doctor Strange. This news is not shocking, but I just can't wait to see the guy on screen again.
I think they're going to have to get to a point where they're going to have to film his cameos ahead of time because the man is like 94, 96 years old now. So they're going to have to either probably, I mean, I don't want to say anything negative or anything ill towards Stan Lee, the creator of Marvel and one of the co-founders, but, you know, it's really remarkable he's doing what he's doing at his age. And just a little side note for you, this past year at Comic-Con was his last con ever. So he's never doing a convention again. Mike actually told me that information, and I did find it on the web. There was an article. He's like, he's just old, he's tired, and he just wants to spend the remainder of his years with his wife. So
I understand that.
Yeah. So ABC has revealed the first official photo of Gabriel Luna as Robbie Reyes, a.k.a. Ghost Rider, in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So there he is. Look at him.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's... So okay. Now this is a different Ghost Rider. This is not Johnny Blaze. This is Robbie Reyes, a.k.a. Ghost Rider. So this
and
is,
he has a car as opposed to a motorbike, correct?
Yes, this is... And he has a really cool car. So,
he has a very cool car.
Yeah, he has a really cool car.
Okay.
So I'm excited for that.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very exciting. In other news, former Mythbusters Build team will be, this is cool, getting their own Netflix show. So Carrie Byron, Tori Belacci? Yeah, sure. And Grant Imahara will be joining together for the White Rabbit Project coming December 9th.
Wow.
This is cool. Okay, Netflix is getting
really
literally
cool.
Everything. They're doing everything.
Yeah, they're a giant, dude. They're a force to be reckoned with. Netflix is literally putting cable TV out of business as we know it.
They are.
And you know what? I kind of like it.
I'm fine with it.
I kind of like it. I drank the Kool-Aid, and it's really good. Also, this week, DC's Legends of Tomorrow premiere episode will feature Stephen Amell as Oliver Queen.
The premiere episode.
We'll have Ollie in it. So that's kind of cool. And remember he did his cameo when they went into the future. Remember when he had the mechanical, lost his arm and all that? That's kind of cool.
That was great. That was a great episode. From DC to more DC, Constantine's first and only season will be coming to Blu-ray and DVD according to the back of DC Comics releases this week. It states that it is available now, but WB has not shown it available as of yet.
Mm.
You watch the show, Joe?
I have this show.
It's so good.
It's deliciously good.
It's so good, and the fact that it didn't get renewed is so sad. I'm so upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Matt Ryan did a fantastic job as Constantine.
Oh, he did.
I love it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, on November the 12th, the BBC will be releasing a fully animated 6-part series called Doctor Who, The Power of the Daleks. Now, this film was from the destroyed. It was destroyed in the restoration process in 1974. Original audio and still photos have been used to recreate this 1966 classic. So all the
That's
BBC.
Amazing.
So here's a little fun fact for you on the BBC. Back in the day before they started archiving things,
yes,
what would happen is the BBC would just run an episode and then record right over top of it.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. That's how they did it.
Okay. Wow.
So they didn't really, the light bulb didn't click on to the, hey, we need to kind of archive this. So.
Oh, wow. Well, this is going to be, especially for Doctor Who fans, man, people are going to go crazy.
It's a lost episode restored. So.
Wow. Okay, so this week, Star Trek celebrated its 50-year anniversary on September 8th, 1966. CBS aired The Cage. If it wasn't for Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz Productions studio Detelu, right, that took a chance on Star Trek, it probably would not be what it is today. 50 years of Star Trek, Joe.
Man.
That's amazing.
You know, I was watching the trailer that Paramount put out this past week for the 50th anniversary, and it just showed all the movies and, you know, Patrick Stewart and William Shatner and Nimoy and all the
so greats.
Yeah, dude, I'm just like, man, that is... I'm a Trekkie like you are with your dad. Mm-hmm. We've had this discussion. True. We kind of had mirrored childhoods, but in different decades. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, and that's really cool. And last but not least, rounding us out in the news, before we go to our guest of the week, who is here with us. Also, if you subscribed to our iTunes and YouTube feeds, you would have noticed something very special drop this past week. PopX's very own, yours truly, Joe Burke, along with partnership podcast Next Big Thing Radio, interviewed actor Gene Farber. Now, the actor is the actor that played Karpov in Captain America: Civil War.
Yes.
So I got to talk to, now Karpov was the guy in the beginning of Civil War that was reading the book to Bucky to make him in the trance. And so the entire interview with the Hollywood actor is available now on PopX's YouTube, iTunes, and Google Play feeds. Download and listen and enjoy.
Joe, that was incredible, man. I listened to the entire thing. You did a wonderful job.
Thanks, man.
And it's so exciting to talk to. I mean, this guy is an established actor. He's been in X-Men First Class, Civil War.
Call of Duty.
I mean, it's incredible what this guy has done. So, I really appreciate what you did, man.
It was really fun. And I have to say, I'm really thankful that Brett over at Next Big Thing Radio pulled me in for that and just let me just geek out for a little bit and just be me. And strangely enough, there was a Blue Man Group connection of all things. So I won't spoil that for you, but definitely dig into that. So Austin, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can formally introduce our hosts.
Here we go, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us is our very special guest for this week's show. This man is a local established documentarian as well as a professor at Morehead State University, the university in which I attend. He has so many wonderful documentaries under his belt and is currently working on more projects. He is here all the way from Morehead, Kentucky, exactly where I'm from as well. Welcome to the show, Stephen Middleton. Steve, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, Austin. Glad to be here and glad to join you all. And thank you for that riveting introduction.
Oh, man. He's got a nice microphone. I can hear that. It's just... It's very smooth.
It's a lot better than the old microphone that I had, Joe.
I'm digging it. So, Austin, take the wheel on this for a little bit.
Yeah. So, Steve, as a movie fanatic and a huge fan of documentaries, I am a big fan of what you do. But my first question for you is, what is it like to balance life as a professor as well as being an established local documentarian?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Well, working for a university or working in higher education, you kind of work in a bubble anyway. You know, you can't complain because you're always close to a holiday or some time off. So you can't complain too much about working at a university. But, you know, primarily when there's time off is when you do projects. And so you're always trying to work towards that next thing. And that's pretty much how you do it, you know. And years of teaching, you kind of get a shorthand, if you will, on what to do. And so it's doable. If you want to do it and you love what you do, it's doable.
Awesome.
I'll say that you do a good job, Steve.
Thank you, Austin.
Are you trying to earn extra credit on PopX?
You are filling up to it.
All right, Mr. Burke, you need to just simmer down. But, you know, as we're diving into this, and we had a chance to just chat briefly before the show went live, and you and I have a great deal of common. We have some common friends and some common places. And it's surprising that we've never ran into each other in our many years of working in the film industry. So growing up, what was your childhood like? Were you always curious about cameras and film?
Well, you know, just like I'm sure you all were and some of the other folks you all are friends with. You know, I moved around a lot as a kid. I didn't always live in Kentucky. And your one constant's television and movies, and you kind of just develop a geeky appreciation, if you will, of things you like. And, you know, when I got in high school, my two goals in life were always to play music and make movies. And it's an odd film to say is an inspirational film, but the movie Ed Wood, the old Tim Burton film, which I think still the best Tim Burton film, inspired me to try to make movies because, you know, the story of Edward D. Wood Jr., you know, with a skeleton crew just trying to make movies just for the love of it, you know, spoke to me. And by that point in my life, I'd lived in rural Elliott County, Kentucky, which you both can attest to. Living in rural Kentucky has its challenges. And, you know, my mom had an old camera, and my buddies and myself, we would try to write movies and produce things here and there. And documentary just kind of fell into my lap because it was something you could do with a lower quality camera equipment and still, you know, tell a story. But you know, radio and television, especially TV and movies, growing up in the era of the 90s, late 80s into the early 90s, you had such cult shows and movies that you just fell in love with.
That's why
I kind of ended up doing this stuff. And that's kind of what I do at school, too, at the university, talk about pop culture like you guys do here.
Yeah, that's actually how I got to know you, is Austin had said, man, he actually approached me and he said he wants to be on our show. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of emerging of the worlds. And I'm really glad that you're here. And, you know, just hearing about your growing up in, was it Elliott County?
Right.
Yeah. So I'm Letcher County, and I think Austin would probably testify to him being in Pike County, Kentucky. His family's in Somerset now, but he's definitely Pike County through and
Pike,
through.
Pike County.
Cole Run Village, baby.
So we're talking about the Commonwealth right now. Commonwealth Curiosities.
That's right.
Part one and part two are probably among your most well-known documentaries, Steve. Can you give us they are, and especially around campus. That's all people ever talk about, Steve. So can you give us just a little insight into what Volume 1 and Volume 2 are about?
I'll give a little bit of lead into why the Commonwealth Curiosities happened. Right before we did these projects, we did a project called Never Get Out Alive, which was about Appalachian death and dying traditions.
Oh, yeah.
And you all know, I mean, you know, it's a big deal when you see a funeral procession and you pull off the road. And, you know, in rural communities, there's a lot of still interesting stuff, you know, from stake handling funerals to people doing funeral photography. And the project itself was just so
bizarre,
vast,
and
I was like, I don't really want to do anything like this again, so let's find something real lighthearted. And this is kind of where they came out of.
For our listeners out there that don't understand Appalachian culture and tradition,
and
we all three are talking because this is where we are come from originally. What do you mean by when you pull over on the side of the road for a funeral procession? Can you know what you mean, but I want to hear it from your words.
Well, you know, when you see the hearse and you see the limousine and you see a line of cars all with their headlights on, which, you know, realizes a funeral in this part of Kentucky and really, you know, West Virginia too, you stop and pull over to the side of the road as a sign of respect as the procession passes. And I've almost rear-ended folks before not realizing what's going on. And folks from outside the region are very confused by that.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I actually took my wife, Alexandra, who's originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We were back home it was about 2 or 3 years ago, and we were passing such procession, and I pulled over, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And this was
you lost your mind?
No, this is literally on US 23 Highway North.
Oh, yeah.
And so I pulled over on the side of the road and I was like, no, you do this out of respect. You do this because, you know, that's a person's legacy and this is just honoring them. So, that's really cool, man, to hear you say that.
Oh, thanks.
But Commonwealth Curiosities.
They grew out of that, you know, so I wanted to find something that was kind of zany and more, lighthearted. And, you know, I've always kind of had a penchant for finding the, you know, the macabre and the bizarre and the off the beaten path type stuff. And so I kind of made a short list of kind of odd places in Kentucky, like Vent Havens, the only ventriloquist dummy museum in the world, you know, in Kentucky. And of course, there's, you know, the Kentucky Reptile Museum and Zoo, which has the largest collection of venomous snakes in the world in eastern Kentucky. You know, and then Dinosaur World, where they have giant dinosaurs, and, you know, all these strange places in Kentucky that not a lot of people actually visit. I was like, oh, this would be kind of cool, you know, and then calling people, and they're like, yeah, you know, instead of people telling you they don't want to talk to you, they're excited to talk to you. Oh, you want to talk about ventriloquist dummies? All right, yeah, come on by. We got the largest collection in the world. And, you know, it was fun, and it was fun traveling around and finding these places. And after we finished volume one, which was just Commonwealth Curiosity at that time, folks called and emailed, and all these strange folks would say, hey, come check out our place. And there were so many that led us to do the second volume.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Kind of word of mouth, guerrilla style marketing.
Yeah.
I want to know, Steve. So out of all of the, because you've covered so many unique attractions in both volumes, which one of those impacted you the most? Now, if you can't pick one, that's okay. But there has to be one.
A few. I really liked the Ventriloquist Dummy Museum, Vent Haven.
That's a good one.
Yeah. It's so bizarre that there's actually a Ventriloquist Dummy Museum in general. In the second volume, I really liked there was a guy and of course, you guys being from Eastern Kentucky, in Van Leer, Kentucky.
I know where Van Leer is. Home of Loretta Lynn.
Yeah. He ran the East Kentucky Museum of Mysteries.
Oh, yeah. I know that guy. I don't know him, but I've heard about it.
A very interesting man.
Yeah.
And he didn't really have a lot to offer, but man, it was as if 60 Minutes had come to visit him that day. You know,
seriously.
Just a couple of us. He was so that was kind of heartwarming, if you will. But I really liked the Jefferson Davis Monument out in Fairview, Kentucky. There's a giant obelisk only 200 or 300 feet smaller than the Washington Monument in honor of the first Confederate president, Jefferson Davis.
Wow.
And not a lot of folks know about this place unless you live way out there in Western Kentucky. But the kicker, you know, of course, right in the middle of the drama of Jefferson Davis' statue being removed in State House here in Kentucky, was when we were out there. It's a state-ran park, but it's actually managed by an African-American.
Hmm.
And so, you know, going into it, you think, okay, Jefferson Davis, Confederates, Confederate flag, you know, you're going to have a lot of possibly interesting people here. But no, it was really neat. And it was a great learning lesson. And some of my buddies have used that actual clip in some of their sort of public persuasion classes on, you know, especially on hate speech and things like that.
That's
so
incredible.
But it was just fun just being out there, seeing the state of Kentucky and meeting these people, because all these people are zany and somehow have survived and you know, the interstate corporatization of Kentucky, you know, they're still there.
That's interesting. So, you know, kind of on that foot, you know, what inspired you to create and document aspects of Appalachian culture and rural Appalachia specifically? I mean, you could create documentaries about anything, but why there?
I think probably the Appalachia that you and I knew as kids is not the Appalachia that Austin sees now.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah.
And even a generation or two before us saw a different Appalachia. Like once satellite TV and fast food came into Eastern Kentucky, people quickly homogenized to every other aspect of the world. So they had all these unique cultures and traditions in our region. And you had a hard, you know, working class people who lived off the land, and that's gone now. And not to get too political, but I mean, there's a lot of different factors, but you go in some of these towns now and you know, they got the Dollar General and that's about it. And folks just kind of hanging around the streets all day. So I thought it was cool. Just try to show some aspect of what my grandmother would talk about, and even my dad's generation. That's kind of what interested me to try to find different aspects of Appalachia. And they're disappearing. The old Appalachian ways are almost gone.
Yeah, they are. It's really funny that you say that. Went home a couple of years ago, and a lot of the old timers that I grew up with passed away and moved on, and with them, so many tricks of the trade and specific things that they did, and those legacies and that knowledge was not passed on to their generation. I mean, I don't mean to be condescending in any way, but the generations that took up the fold afterwards, and I'm not going to mention any specific families or anything. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but basically they all went into drugs and alcohol all this kind of craziness. And it's really sad because you got this hardworking farmer who knew how to cultivate the land, and he could go out into the woods and spot a weed or a vine and say, you know what, you can take this right here and do this, this, and this with it. And I'm like, how do you know that?
Right.
And it was just really that knowledge was never his under generations under him didn't acquire it. They just didn't have any interest in it at all. I mean, nobody knows what tangle gut is or what
yellow root
dry land fish.
right.
Yeah. So you know,
dry land fish is good.
Yeah. Dry land. Morel mushrooms for people who have no idea what we're talking about. So that's really cool, man. Hats off to you, because Appalachia is evolving. And I have a question later on that I'm going to ask you that's about the evolution of Appalachia.
Sure. So.
Yeah, I was going to say a while ago, Joe, you were talking about vines. The only vines that people would be able to spot out nowadays are 6-second videos on Twitter.
Or kudzu.
Not that I have any part of that whatsoever.
What about kudzu vines? You can make an app called kudzu.
There you go.
Kudzu.
That's great. That's
that. Joe, we're working magic right
now.
I'm
seeing it, man.
Steve, I want to talk to you. You're working on a project right now, or you just finished an upcoming
project. Got a couple
projects
in the pipeline here, yeah.
Can you tell us about what you're working on, and can you specifically talk about the project that you just did for Morehead State University? Because
that is very
interesting to me.
That project's actually been finished for a while, and that one's kind of beyond me, so that's why it's been so slow kind of getting it out.
Yeah.
But a student at the University of Morehead and myself, we produced the first History of Morehead State University documentary from 1887 until 2015. And it was interesting, the Rowan County War was here. There was a famous family feud that was far bloodier than the Hatfield-McCoy feud that I think around 16 or 20 people or so were killed.
Mm-hmm.
That led to the founding of the school here. And, a lot of interesting politics, and Morehead State was the first school in Kentucky to integrate dorm rooms in the Civil Rights era, and to have the first scholarship black athlete in Kentucky was here at Morehead State. So there's a lot of history here. And we finished that actually back in the spring, and slowly been working with the wheels of marketing on campus to get it going. But yeah, I mean, that's a fun project. Do you have any more questions about that one, or are we going to get to the?
I just personally I wanted an update on it because that's something that I'm excited for. But that's so interesting that you were able to do that. I mean, you are a part of this bigger university, and the fact that you were able to dig deep and find things about it that most people, including myself, do not know. I find that very interesting. But yeah, tell us more about what else you have.
Well, the project that's most fresh in my mind and what we worked on all summer was a project on the theft of Indian Head Rock out of the Ohio River back in 2007, 2008. And this is a story that made national news in mostly a negative way. But there was this historic rock in the river between South Shore, Kentucky, and Portsmouth, Ohio, and this guy and his buddies found it, and they just pulled it out of the river and pretty much celebrated. They found this old rock, and state of Kentucky sued this guy, and then Ohio sued Kentucky, and then Kentucky sued Ohio, claiming they owned the Ohio River, even though it's named Ohio, and it led to this huge media story that was on, CBS covered it. New York Times even wrote an article on it, and it got crazier and crazier. the Kentucky Attorney General at the time, Jack Conway, was challenged to a paper, rock, scissors battle with the Ohio governor, and the winner of the battle got to keep the rock. And so it's a lot of interesting people have contacted about this project already. So that's kind of the most recent work. And I don't even know where to start on this one. It's so zany that uniquely Kentucky and Southern Ohio, I guess.
Well, there's so much craziness in Kentucky. There's so much that you could do here. And that's what I love about your documentaries is you don't just focus on the stuff that people know already. You go into these deep territories and you focus on things that maybe people
shine
a good light on it as well.
One thing that you guys can attest to being from Southeast Kentucky is you get tired of watching stuff on coal mining.
Same old thing.
You get tired of hearing news about coal, you know, and when you say you make documentaries and the Appalachian region, which I've kind of branched out more into the state, I guess, with a couple of curiosities. Yeah. People assume it's about coal all the time.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, no, no.
There's a lot more. I mean, coal might be king, but there's still a cash crop called tobacco.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, and that's technically not Kentucky's number one. Anyway. But did you ever work for the Apple Shop, which is Appalachian Food
Merchant? No, I knew a lot of those folks around where, you know, my sort of video work and knowledge in state was always with KET.
Okay.
Kentucky Educational Television.
Right out of Lexington.
Right. Yeah. And down in Whitesburg, that's where all the cool cats were. That's where all the people doing cutting edge stuff were at, you know, and so I always knew most of them, you know, and knew of them or would run into folks, and I was always sort of jealous of what was going on down there at Apple Shop.
Yeah, I gotta kind of brag a little bit about some of my background. I was kind of taken under the wing of a lot of people at Apple Shop: Nick Saberla, Herb Smith, Mimi Pickering.
Oh yeah, Mimi.
You know, just Ann Smith, I think it is.
Yeah.
Some great filmmakers that made some really truly amazing documentaries, and part of Appalachian legacy. You know, some of these movies are. You think of A Stranger with a Camera, you know, some of those, it's just really fascinating documentaries that you would not know about any other way. And I'm really blessed to have been taken under the wing of those, because that's where I got a lot. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now this very second if it wasn't for those people at the Apple Shop teaching me about film production, post-production and editing and all that stuff, and pretty much exposing me to my first ever Macintosh.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty awesome, and being able to edit, splice up, and produce a feature film, and just being part of the road crew going out and filming, and you know all about all this stuff. I mean, you've experienced it, and in a few of your videos, you feature some local artists, including Mr. Josh Haywood and Brett Ratliff.
Oh yeah.
Now, these are two cats that I know very well because I hung out with them quite a bit at the Apple Shop, because Brett is kind of known synonymously for his music, and then Josh is for his claw hammer and his artwork as well. And so what has it been like seeing Appalachia through your lens of these talented individuals that are kind of carrying the torch today?
Well, you know, I know Brett and I have been friends for a long time, mm-hmm. and I've always played on and off in string bands over the years myself, and that's kind of how my connection to Brett started. We kind of hung around the same crowds, and I kind of quit playing music, not necessarily quit, but just sort of kind of worked more on movies, making documentaries. Just recently kind of took back up playing music again with a group. But yes, Brett was always a unique dude. He, mm-hmm. To me, he was just right out of the 1930s.
Oh, yeah.
But yet, you know, modern. And, you know, he was from Van Leer, Kentucky, we were just talking about. And, you know, Pikeville's a world away from Van Leer, Kentucky. So, yeah, you know, Brett, my dealings with Brett were always so interesting. And those guys, I mean, playing old-time Appalachian music as well, you know, like people who want to play that. And all the musicians that I meet, especially at the university, you know, they want to be rock stars. They want to be like big time pop stars.
Yeah.
You know, Brett wanted to make it playing old time banjo, like songs from the '20s and thirties. So one of the things I hope the camera translated was, here was this guy, you know, a young guy and an educated guy who was trying to play this old music and these old traditions, and he's making a pretty good go at it.
Yeah.
And outside of Kentucky, you know, he toured Europe and
yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
Playing old time Appalachian music, and they love it, you know, but you go back to your hometown of, you know, Van Leer or, you know, some of those other Prestonsburg and
Winesburg or whatever,
some of those areas. I mean, you might only get five folks to show up to hear you play,
you know,
but people outside the region. So I hope that's kind of what it translated. Now, Mr. Haywood's kind of a beast of a different sort. He was an interesting guy.
Yeah, he's a very eclectic individual, to say the least. And he and I have done a couple of projects together, particularly at Summit City Lounge in downtown Whitesburg. He created and designed the amazing Summit City logo with the building and the smoke coming out of the top. Amazing artist. And it was really interesting to work with him, but he's eclectic is the best way I can.
Oh yeah, you know, and of course he's a famed tattoo artist.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, and he's got his own shop in downtown Whitesburg, don't he? Yeah,
yeah, he was even on Al Jazeera when they did the Al Jazeera visit to Appalachia a year or two back. He was featured on that. Yeah. But yeah, he's an interesting guy. You know, he. Of course, when I think the video you were talking, he lived in Louisville at that time before he moved to Whitesburg. But he's more of your classic, I think, urban eclectic artist. Where Brett, you know, I knew far better, and Brett was more just raw and real.
It's so weird it's weird the parallels between you and I. It's just mind blowing. And when I started diving into your videos this past week and I started seeing these individuals, I'm like, what? I'm like, wait. I'm transported back to 2005. This can't be real. What's going on here? And so it was pretty freaking awesome, I gotta say, to watch that and see these people that I've worked with and that I have a mutual love and respect for. And I really hats off to you for capturing
thanks. Yeah, yeah, thank you.
Really well done.
Guys, I want to shift the tide a little bit here. I have a few questions that I think are very much important that I think our fans are going to want to hear right now, Steve.
Sure.
So I know you're a big movie fan.
Right.
We talked about it before. So I've got some questions lined up.
Okay.
I'm going to dig deep into the mind of Stephen Middleton.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Plus, I've always been curious about
going deep. Boys, going deep.
Okay. We're going deep. Okay.
All right.
These are just really short and quick questions. So here we go. I'm going to spout them off, and you answer as quick or as long as you want to. Question number one, favorite documentarian? Go.
Werner Herzog.
Okay. Yeah. You may have talked about him in class a few times.
Yeah,
question number two, who is your favorite non-documentary director?
Jim Jarmusch.
Ooh, yeah. Great choice. Yeah. Great choice. Okay, favorite movie genre?
Oh, gosh, mystery, maybe?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Okay.
Favorite actor and actress?
Boy, that's a tough one.
If you can't choose one, you can spout out.
Actress, I would probably say Kate Blanchett. Actor, boy, that's a really tough one. I really like Steve Buscemi.
Okay. I love that choice. Have you watched, what's the television show that
Boardwalk Empire, great show.
Yes. Yeah. Boardwalk Empire, yes, sir.
Amazing show. He kills it in that. In your opinion, what is the best documentary ever made?
Oh, that's a tough one. Maybe The Last Waltz.
Okay. You know, okay.
The band's finale concert.
Right.
That or I really like the J.D. Wilkes film Seven Signs, which I've talked about in class a lot with Austin's class.
Yeah. And my final question is, what is the best non-documentary, in your opinion, film ever made?
Oh, wow. There's several I'll spout out here. I really like The Jerk.
Okay. Yeah.
The new phone really looks here. The new phone looks here. I really like the Jim Jarmusch movie Mystery Train.
Okay.
And I really like Harold and Maude.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
I like those. Those are great. Great choices.
So, let's see. We got film genres, favorite film genres, and favorite. So, what will be favorite Kentucky-grown musical artist?
You know, I really like Sturgill Simpson here currently.
Sturgill Simpson, okay.
Dwight Yoakam probably would be up there.
Or as we like to call him, D-Y.
D-Y Yoakam. You know, he's of course worked in films, yeah, and produced films.
Mustard and Biscuits.
Right. He should have won the Oscar for the role of Sling Blade.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's so many, you know. Yeah, I'll stick with those. Dwight Yoakam and Sturgill Simpson.
All right, I got one for you. Favorite Appalachian comfort food? I'll give you my answer after you answer.
Salmon patties.
Salmon patties. Get out of here.
Yeah. Or my grandma called them Jack Mackerel.
Jack Mackerel. Mine will be soup beans and cornbread.
Soup beans and cornbread went with the salmon patties at the Middleton household.
Yeah. I was going to say soup beans and mustard greens, man.
Soup beans.
Come on.
Dude. Who's getting hungry? I'm serious, man.
Go eat.
Some salmon patties on the thing. You know, this is kind of funny. And you would only get this if you were in Appalachia. My mom called me today, and they live back in Pikeville, Kentucky. And she called me, and she's like, so I'm going to send you down a fresh bag of fall beans and a Kushaw.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, my God, seriously? And so Alex has, and here's, now this too is not, you would have to be in Appalachia to understand what this is what do you call dried beans? Shucky beans. You ever had shucky beans?
Right, I've had some what people called leather britches.
It's same thing. Yeah. It's same thing.
Yeah, okay.
Leather britches and chucky beans. So she sent me a bag of those too. That she green beans that she dried in the summer heat. Then you rehydrate them, boil them, add a handful of pinto beans, and you get this unique dried flavor with pork fat. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'll just leave that right there.
I've never heard so many terms thrown around about beans before in my life. This is so interesting.
If you're in Appalachia, there's a lot of farting going on. I'm just going to say that right now. So, but
amen, brother.
You know, one of your videos, you feature one of the amazing. Oh my God, dude! I can't believe you did this. It's so awesome. When I saw this on the top of your list. Druthers of Campbellsville, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. That's the closest I came to being viral.
Oh, my God.
The video. I think we got only 15,000 views on that.
And it's the only existing one from the former 70s and 80s fast food chain. And did you grow up a Druthers kid as well?
I did, you know. And, you know, the years right before my family moved back to Kentucky, we lived in a very small town in Arizona. And when we would come back, it was one of the places we would go to the Olive Hill, Kentucky Druthers. And I remember, of course, I remember the fish sandwich and the fish basket, you know.
And let me stop you right there.
Yeah.
Is the fish like it still was back in the day?
It tasted exactly the way I remember it.
Shut the front door.
It did. No joke.
Oh, my God, dude. I'm telling you. And so, tater wedges, do they still have those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
They have the exact same menu in 2016 as they had in 1986, I believe he said.
That just blows my mind.
They even have lemon turnovers.
Oh, the lemon tart turnovers.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm. Wow. Yeah. So we went from talking about beans to...
Appalachian people love their food.
I'm telling you, man, you have no idea. It's just like tangle gut and wild mushrooms and soup beans and cornbread and I don't know what else. But that is just mind-blowing that you did that. And so how did you discover that there was one, or did you just something common knowledge?
In the second Commonwealth Curiosities film, I worked with a guy by the name of Corey Ramsey who runs a... sort of a social media syndicate called map.kentucky.
I've heard of him.
He's a pretty big name in the state, and he and his team, they would try to focus on the odd and strange locations outside of Lexington, Louisville, because that's his thing. Is, you know, you talk about Kentucky, you talk about the Derby, and then you get into stereotypes after that. And he actually was sponsored by Druthers, and I saw him one day, and he had on his like NASCAR jacket of sponsors. I was like, "Where'd you find that old Druthers sticker?" And he was like, "Oh, there's still one down in Campbellsville." He has this great broadcaster voice, and it's like, "Really?" And he's like, "Yeah." You know, so I kind of called the guy up and said, "Yeah, come on down." And I guess the rest is history. We were down there half the day talking with the guy, and a fantastic owner too. His name's Steve, and highly recommend anybody to go down there if you're in the region.
I've went there. When I was in college, at Southeast Kentucky, me and a bunch of the guys, we would get out of class early at like 12 o'clock, and we were like, "You guys want to go on a road trip?" And they'd be like, "Yeah, where are we going?" I was like, "You ever eat Druthers?"
That's amazing.
And they'd be like, "Yeah." I was like, "Well, let's go to Campbellsville." We drive 3.5 hours from Letcher County, Kentucky, just to get a burger. That's amazing. I mean, you just get a bunch of, you know, good old boys together that ain't got nothing better to do. I mean, we wasn't into drugs or alcohol or anything crazy like that. We were just in it for laughing in a car, having a good time, laughing over a good meal, and then just fun, crazy stuff on the way back. I mean, that's what you do in Appalachia. You just have fun. And, you know, it kind of leads me up to my last question here.
Sure.
From your own perspective, how have you seen the changes in Appalachia in the past decade? You know, I know you talked about a little bit about coal, but now the lack of the industry.
Right.
Have you noticed things getting better, stable?
Oh,
worse?
No, far worse. Yeah. And one of the things that, I, from a documentary perspective, you got to show the truth.
Yeah.
You don't want to make these garbage reality programs.
Nope.
And you need to show the truth as it is. And you go to these towns and there's just people wandering the streets in small town Kentucky.
Sad.
And it's very sad. And the younger people never learned the tradition. So, I mean, you have more people, urban cities farming and growing, you know, gardens, and people in rural Eastern Kentucky who have the ability to grow all this produce if they wanted to, or heck, even have goats or chickens or cows, you know, but they don't, you know, they live off fast food and of course Walmart, too.
They depend on the food truck to bring in their food, and they don't know how to do it themselves. And heaven forbid, you know, the Walking Dead of zombie apocalypse breaks out. You don't know what you're going to do for food. You don't know how to shoot a gun and kill a squirrel. So you're screwed. So thank God for the good old redneck. You know what I'm saying? But it's funny that you say that, though. You saw something you just said really kind of struck a really crazy memory with me. I went back home to Kentucky in April, and this past year with my father to visit my grandmother. And I was at the Pikeville at the Holiday Inn.
All right.
And we went up to the counter and we were just talking to the clerk there. And there were some people there and they just kind of looking around, kind of lost, and just had this like daze over their face. It wasn't drugs or anything. It was just like a sense of hopelessness.
Right.
You know, it's just like we're trying. You know, you can sense it in their eyes that they're struggling, that times are hard, times are difficult. And I got to be honest with you, Steve, it kind of broke my heart a little bit, because when I left Kentucky, it wasn't like that.
No. And one of the things I notice as well, you know, it was Highway 23 you mentioned earlier. That was the old hillbilly highway.
Yeah.
You jumped in your vehicle and you went somewhere to find work. Mm-hmm. There's so many people today that, and it's not just, you know, coal jobs, but you get so many people who really aren't interested in getting an education or not really interested in traveling to try to find work.
Or can't afford it.
Right. And, you know, they call it the brain drain now in some of these counties where the cream of the crop left.
Mm.
You know, they went to Lexington, Louisville, or Cincinnati.
I went to Orlando.
Right.
I guess I'm part of that brain drain. I'm sorry. But I have a valid excuse for mine. So because trust me, my home is always, you can take the boy out of the hills, but you can't take the hills out of the boy. You know,
mm-hmm. But home is always Kentucky, Joe.
There you go.
Austin.
But yeah, Steve, Listen, we thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
For coming on today, man. We had so many good discussions. We got a lot of information out of you. And for all of our viewers out there listening, can they follow you anywhere? Where do they go?
Sure. I have Instagram. Okay. Instagram's at State Run Media. And I have Twitter at State Run Media PR.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I have a Facebook page, State Run Media Productions. You can like that as well. And, of course, you can see all my projects on Vimeo, vimeo.com/State Run Media Productions.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much once again, man.
We glad to be here.
Coming on the show today.
All right, man. So, Steve, we'll see you on the down low, my friend. Thank you so much for your time.
Nice to meet you guys.
And it's nice to meet you too, man. Have a good
one. Nice to meet you.
See ya.
Later. All righty. So, as always, if you see something exciting or you're looking at a cool comic book on the shelves or you're in the theater or around geek culture in general, let us know about it. You can always call in on our PopX hotline. Just dial 850-417-7679. That's 850-417-POPX. Nice. Is that the new iPhone 7? It looks like it. I think it is. I think it's a new iPhone 7.
That ain't right.
They've downgraded.
Whatever it is.
Also, we are a part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network.
Yes, and follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Patreon, Twitter, Pinterest, all at PopXCast. And you can email us throughout the week if you want to drop us a note. You have a show suggestion. You have a suggestion for someone that we can interview. You can do that, PopXCast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from all of our listeners. And also for future or past shows, always check out our official website at popxcast.com.
I am Austin Burke at the Burkinator with a 3 instead of the E on all the twits and the Instagrams.
Oh,
and I also have a YouTube page where I do movie reviews and reactions. Just type in Austin Burke.
Oh, very well. And I am Joe Burke. That is at Rotcav, Rotcav on the web. And, of course, hats off to the amazing and talented Team PopX right here. I want to say hello to Miss Lindsay Badger for just making this a well-oiled machine, as always. And I do want to give her a plug because we will be having more of Lindsay next week as we dive into an episode that's going to be so fun. Also, Mr. Mike Ippolito, thank you for doing the slides. Thank you for the love. Oh, man, sweet home Chicago. You're welcome.
Beautiful.
You got a pack of cigarettes, a full tank of gas, and I love that. So stay tuned for next week as we are going to be entering episode number 33. This one I'm excited. This one I'm really pumped about. I mean, I was excited about this week, but this one is just so nerdy. This one is a nerdy one for you. Cereal and Saturday morning cartoons. So this is going to be fun.
Topic.
We dive into our favorite retro Saturday morning cartoons and the breakfast cereals that we ate while we watched TV.
Wow.
So Austin will be delivering his 5 cereals and his 5 cartoons. I'll be doing the same as well as Miss Badger. So you're going to get some really cool love, some graphics, some throwbacks. So make sure you're listening. So from all of us here at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. And we will see you next week. Anything closing, Austin?
We had a great show. I mean, we had a phenomenal show and a phenomenal guest. And be sure to tune in next week because I'm really excited to talk about some cereals.
Some cereals. All right, guys. Cereal. Take care. And we'll see you on the flip side.
From everyone here at PopXCast, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and don't forget to subscribe for more great content. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on, all at PopXCast.